Hello, welcome to another edition of CFTV Live. I'm Jared Stansberry, joined as always by my friend Jeff Woody, who can breathe this week.
I was just bragging to Jared. It's not a thing that I could do since last week. You know, you may be able to sense some still scratchiness in the voice.
I was going to say, your voice doesn't sound back to normal yet.
No, it's not. But I am on drugs, so that's good.
What kind of drugs?
Antibiotics.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good news.
And cocaine.
I saw you at Size House of Trivia on Saturday, and I was like, wow, you can show up to a event with all the big wigs, but you can't show up to do a CFTV Live twice.
Right. Yeah, that was also Saturday versus Thursday and Tuesday, and I had been on drugs starting on Friday. So...
why did it take you so long to go to the doctor?
Well, because I figured it was just like a little, it was like a cold, like I'll kick it. And then it just didn't get better. And it progressively did like this, and it like moved. So if you were wondering, bacterial sinus infection. So as long as I don't like stick my fingers in my mouth and then touch you, or we don't make out, then we're
please,
fine.
Like, please don't like put your mouth on the microphone or anything. As always, CFTV Live brought to you.
Screen grabs that.
They will. I probably will.
Yeah.
As always, CFTV Live brought to you by our friends at Agrigold. We wouldn't be able to do this without them. And obviously a great season helped by our friends at Agrigold. Spring football is over, Jeff.
Spring football is over.
Were you disappointed that we weren't able to go to a spring game?
You weren't.
I was not overly disappointed. This is accurate.
Well, no, I was saying you weren't able to go to a spring game.
Would you have not gone either way?
I did go.
Oh, true.
So,
well, this is awkward.
No, I think it is disappointing because, I mean, I don't know how much I think they would like to have it released, but I'm not going to really say anything that would be kind of volunteering information that they wouldn't like.
Yeah.
But, I think people are going to be really pleased with where things are. One of the things that I really like is the way that Campbell treats former players. And this isn't any knock to Rhodes at all, but because I was a current player when he was there. Campbell outright said, you know, this, our house is your house. If you guys want to come to meetings, you want to come to practice, you want to come, whatever you want to come watch, sans getting tickets for the games, whatever you want to come watch, just come. Just let us know when you want to come and you can sit in on anything. And so that was a really healthy thing. And then the other thing that I thought was really nice, and this is something I don't think many people will really understand that didn't play. You could probably lump high school football into this. So like if you've seen multiple high schools or multiple colleges and you go to a successful high school program, you're likely not going to see a lot of like death screaming. Like you're not going to see a lot of people just shouting like, let's go, hustle, whoa. Like you're not going to see a lot of that screaming, especially at practice. During training, it might be there. But during practices, it's meant to be, I mean, you're practicing. It's business-like. It's not meant to be.
Well, and it's teaching more
it's
than
teaching,
it, yeah,
right.
it's yelling and screaming at people.
And so when, especially kind of in the latter Rhodes years, there were a couple personalities that did that, and they allowed, kind of, there were more people because of a couple of them were like, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And so kind of it permeated to being like, sometimes it would just become like a death screaming match.
One of my favorite Paul Rhodes open practice moments was the first spring practice for a certain offensive coordinator that was hired by Coach Rhodes. He screamed at a graduate assistant for not hitting the tight ends hard enough with the dummies.
I'm assuming you mean one who is larger than Rhodes.
Yes, this is accurate.
Wider.
Has been to more Orange Bowls than Paul Rhodes has.
Looks more like an orange.
Yes.
Anyway.
That's not a very nice thing to say. But.
He's not a nice person. At the spring scrimmage, there was none of that. I mean, there was nothing that was death shrieking. I mean, if a guy was being really lazy or doing something that was going to potentially hurt somebody, just by most of the time that is laziness. Like you take bad steps, you get knocked over, you roll into someone's ankle. That's how people get hurt. But so if something was, whether it's really lazy or like really out of the way, whether it's somebody, you know, pushing somebody, whatever, like that's when a voice would get raised for a second. But most of the coaching was done, not to get too much personal space, most of the coaching was done like this. So like somebody would come off the field and like Nate Shielhaus is the one that I watched a lot. And so with somebody would come off the field, like Johnny Lang would come off the field, and you'd watch Mike Warren run, and he'd have his arm around Johnny Lang being like, okay, watch this, and this is what I'm looking for, and this is what I want to see, and then do it. And so the environment, I mean, there was music playing. It was very business-like, very, it was a very healthy environment to be around. I think that was that's the word that comes out of that, is it's very healthy. And so from a practice environment standpoint, from a former player view, like, I really like how open they are to us, which it just makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. And two, just I would want to play now for that team because I would feel like I'm a valued member of that group. I'm never going to get demeaned for just doing something. So I thought, that's the first time I've been to a practice in since last year, and it feels much more mature. And so I think people would be really pleased, and it'd be hard to see that in a spring scrimmage rather than being in the indoor, which it makes it feel much more like a practice than a display. But I was really, really happy with what just the feel of everything was.
So I think one thing, I mean, we've talked so much more about the talent levels and just how much.
Which is absolutely there.
And that's what I was going to say. Not even compared to when you were there, but even in these last couple years when you've been able to go to practice, what we've seen on the field, how much different is that? Like, just seeing that in practice, it's like, is it striking? Like, man, these guys are just considered, like, as a whole, the roster is constructed much better than what it was previously.
They're much bigger where they should be bigger.
Yeah.
And they're much faster where they should be faster.
See, and that's one thing that I remember last summer when we're going to camps and you're seeing guys like Josh Mueller, who didn't play a ton this past season, but like him, or I mean, obviously Julian Good-Jones and Sean Foster and those kinds of guys, you just see them and they look more like a Big 12 offensive lineman than what they ever did before.
And I will say this about the offensive line. I mean, depending on, because there's like 9 guys that could play. I think if I wasn't really watching that intently on who was playing, it was more how they were playing. But if I kind of did my calculations right, like there were like 9 guys that there were just different assemblies of the offensive line of like this guy's going to play center here and he's going to play guard here. And this guy's going to guard here and play tackle here. And then the next lineup they're going to come out with, like, it was just a bunch of dudes. So depending on the assembly of that, so basically it's like Ogie. He's a huge bowling ball of a human. Mm-hmm. But say, like, depending on the assembly, they're not necessarily bigger than they have been, but they're much more athletic. Where Julian Good-Jones was playing, I believe, one of the, like, yeah, he played every offensive line position, but one of them he played tackle, and he got to move around a little bit. And because that dude has really good feet, and he just, that's why he played center as a redshirt sophomore. And, like, because he's got good feet and he can move, then now you let that athleticism take over at tackle. And like, that's at least one of the opportunities that they gave him. And I thought that, like, stuff like that, and then being able to see Sean Foster be the length that he is and kind of the speed that size is moving at, I thought it was just really, the offensive line looked really athletic. And then the other dude that sticks out is Hakeem Butler. Last year was long, and like, you're like, he is athletic. That dude's probably packed on, I would think, maybe 10 pounds of muscle. Like, he looks like an NFL player right now. I mean, granted, he's still got some polishing of his game to do, and I don't think he played just because you don't need to. Like,
right,
you know what you're getting from him. But he looks like an NFL player now. And like I said, there's polishing of the game to have done, but the size and, like, it looks like a Big 12 team. It doesn't look like a scrappy group of underdogs that's going to go play against Oklahoma. This looks like a Big 12 team.
So, I mean, I know you said you don't want to give away too much, but if there's anybody, you mentioned Hakeem, if there's anybody that you did see play that maybe jumped out to you, it's like, man, that guy is better than what I maybe thought that he was, or he's better than what I remembered him being.
Well, kind of like just general themes that I saw. And again, this is based on, so like, don't take this as God's honest truth. This is what, a couple things from the disclaimers. One, it's one practice. So maybe some guy has a bad day or he has like a turned ankle and just doesn't feel great. Two, probably your top 10 guys on the roster didn't play it down, just because you're like, Dave Montgomery didn't play, and it's not breaking any news. You know what you're going to get with David Montgomery. You don't need to put him in injuries risk to see what he's going to do. I'll get back to him in a second. But guys, so disclaimer one is that it's one snapshot. You can't trend this over time. Two is that a lot of your top guys didn't play, so some of the matchups were a little bit unfair. And three, it's still kind of experimental. Like, what defensive line unit works best together? What positions at linebacker work best together? If you play this guy at nickel rather than a corner, does this work? So it's still kind of experimental. So, but that being said, kind of the themes that I saw were that the wide receiving group was the star of the show. I mean, the whole, as a unit. And I think the guys that ended up being the most impressive to me of the ones that played were kind of the guys playing that slot position of DeShante Jones, and I think, I forget the names.
Tariq Milton.
13 and 14.
So Tariq Milton and Josh Johnson.
Yeah, so those two. Jones, Milton, and Johnson. Those three add a totally different element to the group, because they're able to move. I mean, I think there was a touchdown score by DeShante Jones where he went, like, it was a sail route. We went towards the sideline. He caught it, just put one foot in the ground, hard stop. A defensive back ran by him, took one or two steps back over, and then did a hard, like, crossover at the top of the key, made another guy miss and scored. Like, that type of ability. And then Johnson and Milton did similar things. Again, I don't remember if it was against the twos or the threes or the ones, but the talent level that the position group has without even having Hakeem Butler play a down was really impressive.
See, and that's something that Trevor Ryan obviously was really good last year. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that he was, I think really in his entire career, what he was able to do at Iowa State, no one would have expected him to be able to do. And right. He was blazing fast right. for what he was.
He was very good straight line speed,
exactly.
A really good route runner, but he didn't have that much shake
exactly.
in the
open
field.
That's what I was going to say. They add a different element because they're the kind of guys who can make you miss in a telephone booth.
Yeah.
You know, and then that's what they keep saying about guys like Johnny Lang. And, you know, obviously we've seen that from David Howe for many times, mm-hmm. what he does to guys on the defense. There's guys that not only are they fast, but they're shifty, and then they can make their cut, and then they're back at 60 miles an hour mm-hmm. in a second.
Right,
know?
and that's all the way through the position group. And
yeah.
The funny thing is how are you going to get them all the ball?
Well,
like,
I think
that's the question now.
That speaks to the depth. We've talked for 2 years, like when they have Allen, they had Keem, all these guys. We talked about the depth of this group, and we still like didn't really see many of them. You know, we haven't seen much of Jalen Martin, but for 2 years, people have raved about how his talent, we've seen flashes of it when he's been able to get on the field. Mm-hmm. And even now, still, it's like, man, it seems like Jalen Martin should be getting on the field, and he'll still probably be a two.
Right.
When you look at the entire group on paper, just because of how stacked that entire group is.
Mm-hmm. And so that it was really cool to see. And I think the other thing that bodes well for, I don't know if they were kind of putting the handcuffs on the quarterbacks just because there are people there,
yeah.
but I thought all the quarterbacks played relatively simply in that. I mean that in a compliment, where there wasn't a lot of flash done. There wasn't a lot of trying to boot one way and then throw it 80 yards. It was really take the right read, get the ball to your playmakers really quickly, and then let them do the job. And I thought that was really, it benefits the skill set of this group really well, because I think there's two other position groups that stood out to me. The defensive line looks really good from a being able to rush the passer standpoint. They look really good. I think there were some run stuff that wasn't great, but again, it's snapshot and they're still piecemealing
yeah.
who put together. But from a pass rush perspective, they actually had pass rush that was generating someone to get there. And the guys that stood out to me the most were Eni Wazirike is going to be a handful for anybody, especially if they let him play end, if they have enough space. Spencer Benton, believe it or not, in a one-on-one situation, his quickness and technique allowed him to just beat the hell out of pretty much whoever he was playing if he did have kind of a cut it loose, go get the quarterback guy. And then Camilo Tagamoa, when he, like, granted, this has come from like watching one-on-ones where it's just like, you're a guard, I'm a defensive tackle, I'm going to try and get to the quarterback. You don't really have, no one else goes at the same time. So you don't have a pocket to kind of avoid around. So it gives the defensive guy a little more freedom than he would get in a game. But still, watching a single arm bull rush of a starting guard or a potential starting guard like this, just getting underneath the shoulder pads and standing another human being up that's 325 pounds with one arm, that's really rare. And so if he can take all of this like talent that he's kind of floating out there and like direct it in a certain way between Lima and Tagamoa, those two in the middle are going to be absolute just disasters for the rest of the Big 12 if they can do that and put it together.
See, and I think that with him, I remember specifically back to that Iowa game last year when, I mean, he'd just gotten on campus. You know, mm-hmm. that's week two. He got there basically the week of the first game. And they talk about now that he put on all this weight and he was just not in shape to play. Mm-hmm. And it was like they threw him out there for a couple snaps.
Just to see.
Yeah, and he bowled straight through. Who was the right guard for Iowa? He was a good player. But
Butcher? No, he was a tackle.
Yeah.
Daniels?
I don't remember, but it was one of the I would ask Casey since she's our resident Hawkeye. But
what color?
No, I don't remember. But no, I just remember he drove him 3 yards into the backfield, mm-hmm. you know, and it was just one of those moments where you're like, holy cow. Like, yeah. This dude is just absolute brute force. And with Ray being kind of what we saw being, he's like the steady hand. You can put two guys at him and you're not moving him.
Right.
And then you've got Camillo, who it's like, if you put one guy on him, he's moving them 5 yards backwards. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's disruptiveness that they have not had from the middle of that defensive line.
And they've
line.
Got a whole lot of length outside where they've yeah. not had that before, where like Benton's the little guy. He's like 6'2", like 260, which is, I mean, objectively little for a defensive end. But outside of that, like the next little guy is like Jaquan Bailey at like 6'4". Like he's the small guy out there because you have guys like Matt Leo and you guys have Annie Wazirika who are like 6'6" or on up and just athletic and explosive. So they have length outside and they have just bowling balls inside. So it's the defensive line I thought looked really good, and they need to keep improving. They need to keep getting more consistent, and I think they need a little more depth. Guys just need to get healthy and continue to play. But like that was really impressive. And then the other position group, we can probably get to after a break. But there's my favorite of the entire scrimmage. My favorite thing of the entire scrimmage was this next position group.
That's how you do a tease right there. I will say, though, the best glow-up of the 2017-18 Iowa State athletic season is Jaquan Bailey going from 19 to Jaquan Bailey. It's the best glow-up of
it
the
is.
Year. All right, we'll be right back after a break on CFTV Live presented by Agrigold.
Hey, guys, we'll get you back to the Cyclone Fanatic podcast here in a few minutes. I want to tell you a little bit about a story. I was hanging out with Dr. Michael Kruger from Ames Eye Clinic and Des Moines Eye Care a couple weeks ago. We had lunch. And I told Dr. Kruger, hey, man, I hadn't been to the eye doctor since I was like a kid. And I thought back to it. I mean, it's been like at least 25 years since I've gone to the eye doctor. Because my eyes seem fine. Like, I can see. It's not like, you know, I have walk around squinting all the time. But I have headaches a lot. You know, I stare at a screen like 12 hours a day. That can't be good for me. So here's what we're going to do. Coming up in March, later on this month, I'm going to go get my eyes checked. And I'm going to show you guys why it's important to do, how easy it is, and also that you got a cool Cyclone fan in Dr. Kruger who you can go and hang out with. Nothing scary about it. They accept many medical and vision insurance plans at the Ames Eye Clinic in Des Moines Eye Care. Got those two convenient locations, DesMoinesEyeCare.com, AmesEyeClinic.com. Same week appointments. I'll let you guys know how it goes. I could be in glasses the next time you see me. It'll be worth it, though. Go give them a shot. Ames Eye Clinic, Des Moines Eye Care, Dr. Kruger. Now back to the podcast.
Welcome back to CFTV Live. Jared Stansbury, Jeff Woody. Presented by Agrigold, as always. You gave us a tease there before the break.
If you had to guess, what was the position group I watched the most?
Running backs.
Yep. And if you had to guess, what was my favorite thing about that? You didn't get to go. What do you think my favorite thing of that entire group was?
Well, you said David didn't play, right? Kenne.
Right. If I recall correctly, he didn't either.
Okay.
Need to. Here's the thing. It's a trick question. It was David Montgomery. And so before I get there, the running back group looked really good because it was a much more experienced behavior as a running back group, where last year, and even David included, because if you recall, David Montgomery played quarterback in high school. And so last year, and this was kind of, I got to talk to, at Size House Trivia, I got to talk to Shieldhaus for like 20 minutes or so. And he kind of was just like, sort of, you know, again, just talking. He's like my age, which is kind of cool. But they with Montgomery, a lot of times what he would do last year is that he would be looking at like the basics, like looking at the ball rather than looking down the field when he's taking the handoff. And then because he did that, missed the rest of his steps. Mm-hmm. And then just his freak physical talent would get him like 4 yards. And to take Montgomery, because he didn't play, out of that equation, the way that the rest of the running back group operated was very technically sound from getting the ball until the line of scrimmage. And then from there, just let their talent take over. And I think they have a lot of freaks. Like Johnny Lang was really, like, has really quick feet. Mike Warren is still really hard to bring down, just from one-on-one. And Sheldon Crony is like a Mike Tyson punch of a running back. And so they have a lot of talent. It's going to be hard for them to get carries because of 32. But the running back group looked really good. But the most impressive thing I saw out of anybody was David Montgomery. So Dave Montgomery, they were doing a scrimmage, and they would go from the roof is slanted like this. And so they always went towards this end zone. So it was towards the crow's nest. So they had a butt shot on both sides, but they were walking towards where the garage doors are. And so we got to stand in this end zone that's on the short side of which would be the north side of the indoor. And so I got to watch, because my favorite angle to watch, because you can see it better, is watching straight from behind.
Yeah.
Or kind of, if there are people in the way, you get to kind of move off to the side. But you get to see where the cuts are. So Dave Montgomery, every single snap, ones, twos, threes, developmental, every single snap, no matter what the context, was set up 15 yards behind the ball, would look to the sideline, get the play, look back, align in his stance, take his first two steps, and then watch. And then you could see him going like standing here going like this, directing in his head where the guy was supposed to be cutting. And every single snap, I mean, regardless. So say he was supposed to line up as a slot receiver, motion back in to the other side of the quarterback, and then get a zone read going this way. He would line up 15 yards behind where the slot receiver was. When the cue for a motion happened, he would motion back in, line up in a stance 15 yards behind the ball, take his first two steps and watch, and then go like this. And you could see him being like, nope, this is where it's supposed to go. This is where it's supposed to go. And so his correction from last year was seeing what he needs to see before his talent takes over, and being able to understand like what blocking schemes are, rather than just being like, hey, this guy's trying to tackle you, don't let him. So probably there were 100 and some snaps, because you count all ones, twos, threes. Dave Montgomery took 100 and some reps. And it was that, and I talked to Shieldhaus about that, because I couldn't not notice that. Like, it was dumbfounding to me that guy, I mean, granted, you want to be able to lead the position group, but being able to letting guys like Mike Warren, who's older than him, do a lot of the coaching on the sideline, and obviously Shieldhaus the coach, but letting the guys coach on the sideline while getting your reps, and like letting your eyes get trained, even if you're not in injury's way. And I talked to Shieldhaus at Size House Trivia. He said that wasn't just a show for the spring game. Literally every single snap that he wasn't in, he was behind the ball this entire spring. And that to me is absolutely the most impressive thing that a player of his caliber could be doing. Because for me, I would want, like, I always wanted to help the other guys get better. It's like I would always try and see what I wanted to see, and then help coach, you know, whether it's, you know, Sean Trail or something like that. I'm like, hey, this is what I saw, because Coach Pope has other things that he was doing when I was there. But for Montgomery to trust the rest of his running back group to see what they need to see, and then also get his work, like, that is going to be a scary proposition. If he can understand blocking schemes and understand what two extra steps will do to a play, because instead of what stuff like that does is it doesn't seem like a big deal, one step. Well, if I'm running a zone read and I take one extra step, that gives my guard one extra step to push a guy by, rather than trying to if I cut too soon, then trying to, okay, the guard doesn't get a push by, I have to jump cut backwards and then backdoor, and then end up on the outside. What one extra step does is it lets that guard get pushed by. I cut right off his butt, and all of a sudden, rather than getting touched or physically contacted 1 yard in the backfield because I had to jump backwards, I'm getting physically contacted 3 yards down the field. That's an extra 4 yards of work you don't have to do. Mm-hmm. And then once you make in contact, he's the hardest dude in the Big 12 to bring down. Let that, at that point, become, this guy wants to tackle you, don't let him tackle you. And then you can see what that does. So he doesn't have to get 900 yards after contact. He can get 900 yards after contact plus another 600 yards before contact. And so that That is really, really impressive to me. Of all the things that I saw, you know, DeShante's crazy juke moves and, you know, Spencer Benton beat the hell out of a tackle or somebody getting a sack or like Zeb Nolan threw a pass, a touchdown pass that was through a window that was like that. Like, it was funny, the angle that we were sitting and watching, you couldn't even see the ball move at all laterally. It was watching right down the pipe. I mean, the window was like that. And all of those things were really impressive, but Dave Montgomery taking every snap from 15 yards behind the ball was the most impressive thing I saw the entire day.
He seems like one of those guys that, you know, you have a day with a scrimmage, and Coach Campbell's like, you're not playing today.
He would be pissed.
Right, he would be angry.
Yeah.
He's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What do you mean I'm not playing today?
Right.
Like, I think he really loves football. But, I mean, the other part of that is if this offensive line can be better, and this is, you know, I talked to you last night. We're going to talk a little bit about Chris's thing. I mean, I think the most surprising guy that I've heard being impressive out of this spring football is Colin Newell at center. And if he can be really good for them and give Julian Good-Jones an opportunity to move to left guard, which at this point is probably, when we talked about this, would be like the biggest hole that they had, I think, for the most part. Then you've got really one spot left to fill. You said that they've got nine guys or whatever that you thought could fill in that hole. I mean, if the offensive line can get pushed where not only is you're in a position where you might not get first contact until 3 yards downfield, but the guys that who were originally making that first contact are already 3 yards down the field further.
Right.
I mean, it could be scary what Iowa State's run game could be.
Especially when you add the fact that because of the phone booth ability that all of the wide receivers now possess, outside of, I would say, Chase Allen is probably a guy that's not a phone booth guy. Hakeem Butler is in a sense that, like, he can now just be like, no, don't tackle me, and just, like, push someone away.
Right.
But without the phone booth ability, you can't play a pseudo zone that's, like, trying to hybrid, like, a D-gap and, like, put a guy somewhere near it. Because DeShante Jones just caught the ball with 7 yards of space.
Yeah.
Good luck. Or, you know, whomever, Tariq Milton just caught the ball with 5 yards of space. You can't do that. You have to play everything open. And so if the offensive line's able to get pushed, they're going to have relatively small boxes, meaning less guys towards the line of scrimmage, because of the ability of the wide receivers, which opens up really easy opportunities for Dave Montgomery to do really crazy stuff by just doing what needs to be done. And I think one knock on the offensive line in the last year is they didn't get a lot of push. And again, retrospectively looking at that, Montgomery not setting himself up right probably didn't help that. Because, like I said, you take a step 3 yards too soon. If this is my blocker and this is my defender, if I take an extra step, it gets this guy over here. And then the blocker's able to push him by. If I make this cut too soon, this guy comes right here, and it looks like the block didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So sometimes a running back makes an offensive line look bad by taking the wrong step, because it just doesn't allow the timing of the blocks to set up. But this, the ability for him to understand where everything goes, and the offensive line's improvement in athleticism and technique and coordination, like within each other, being able to move people down the field and get time to do it is frightening.
Seeing you listen to people like in the NFL talk about guys like Le'Veon Bell, like
patience.
Exactly. And that Dave Montgomery's not a very big guy.
No.
You know, like he's short.
He's thick.
Yeah, he's thick. But I'm saying he's short. Like behind an offensive line where most of your guys are
6'4"
and taller. I mean, he can kind of sit back there and hide a little bit. Mm-hmm. And like if they can get that push, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we've got push. Maybe we've got him bottled up. And then David Montgomery's already gone.
Right. And he's done it before.
Right.
That what his kind of keynote thing that he would do last year is, I'm not breaking any news, he'd run like this way and go, nope. And then come all the way back out the back door. And you're going, oh God, oh God, oh God. Oh my, 12 yards. Wow.
Yeah.
Neat. Like that was what he would do. So he's got the capacity to just do, like I said, crazy stuff. But maybe this doesn't become crazy stuff, and maybe that becomes crazy
right.
stuff, where he's able to get into the trash, make a linebacker miss, and then pop out the side door 9 yards down the field. So you're not bellying back from 0 to -4. You're going from like 9 to 6 and then forward. So that, I think you're exactly right, where if that patience and ability to trust what's happening is there with Montgomery now, and the offensive line can do a better job of maintaining to give him that capacity for patience, it's frightening what can happen.
How about Orion Vance, guys at that mic position?
It was it was okay. I didn't. A lot of times, again, it's experimental. They were kind of flipping guys around. I thought there were in the defensive secondary and then the linebackers tackling was a little shoddy. But again, I don't know if that's attributed to these are twos and they're like freshmen playing against like, you know, Mike Warren. Like maybe that's the case. I thought the only thing that was a negative was like tackling probably could set to improve. But I know for a fact like three of the top secondary players didn't play, and so. It's a little bit hard to say. And then from a linebacker's perspective, I thought there was a lot more, there were a lot more running lanes. And I don't know if that was because linebackers were misfitting or if it was because the offensive line was doing a better job. It's kind of hard to say again from a one snapshot appearance.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure too, if, I mean, based on the guys that you said were in that frame of didn't play, I mean, I wouldn't think that Marcel or Willie would probably,
I don't think I saw Spears, and I think Willie maybe played like 10 snaps.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So I would think that it was probably mostly younger guys that are being thrown out in the mix there.
Right. So it was hard to tell like a whole scheme perspective. So you kind of got to look at it through like tinted goggles of like the takeaways were the wide receivers were really good. The defensive line has the potential to be really like a top of the big, near the top of the Big 12 in defensive line. And then the running back group, especially David Montgomery, are much more locked in this year than they were in years past.
All right. So I guess kind of to bring it full circle to conclude, do you feel better about the team after spring than you did before?
Yeah, I do. And I think, like I said, there's only one, and I don't know what this, what the legitimacy of this question is based on who played and who didn't, is the only, remember the question marks that we had is Mike linebacker, safeties, and quarterback were the three, like, who's actually going to play. I think Mike linebacker is less of a question. I think they've got 4 to 5 guys that are capable of playing, if you include Regan Northrup, Tymar Sutton, and then Orion Vance. And then obviously Spears and Harvey. Like they've got 5 guys that can do that job. It's just who, kind of what orientation.
Yeah.
The other, I think quarterback, it's you have 2 very good options. I think Kemp is by a personality probably going to be the guy. I don't think, again, I don't know, have any insider knowledge on that. It's just looking from an outside perspective. I think Kemp is the guy because he's the best leader. Zeb had a really good scrimmage too. But anyway, the only question mark that's still a question mark is the defensive secondary. Who's playing the safeties?
I think Eisworth probably, I mean, Campbell singled him out. So
I don't think
he would probably be the defensive MVP of the.
I don't think he played much at all. So
that's
again,
what
I don't know if that's because I know Peavy and Payne didn't play either.
Yeah.
And so like maybe Peavy, Payne and Eisworth also all playing remedies this question right now. But I thought the defensive secondary had a pretty poor scrimmage.
Well, and that'll happen too. I mean, outside of Peavy and Payne, for the most part, the guys that are in that defensive secondary room are young.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've brought in like 10 defensive backs in 2 classes.
Yeah.
So those guys are all real young going against guys who have played
really
a lot
good.
Of football.
Right.
Yeah. Who are really good.
Yeah. So I thought that was the only thing that like a thing that needs to get patched up before the season starts. But again, that could be already patched up and we just didn't see it
in
the one scrimmage that I saw because of Peavy, Payne and Eisworth not playing. So you're playing your twos against one of the best position groups that Iowa State has at wide receiver. So I thought it was really comforting to watch how things went down, the way practice was conducted, the way they're going about things. I feel very confident with where Iowa State football is now, especially heading into summer and into the next season.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Talk to you guys again soon. Thanks for tuning in to CFTV Live presented by AgriGold.